go through the rest of 1 Samuel 25. Like we said, you know, the Bible does do a great job of showing us these great heroes of the faith, and at the same time also showing us that they were just as human as the rest of us. They lost their tempers, they said things they shouldn't have said, did things they shouldn't have done, and
They were human,
exactly. And that encourages us to see, hey, you know what, they weren't just 24-7, 365 perfect living specimens of faithful people to God. They were just like us. So I think it's important for us as we're going through on this, looking at the life of David, to stop and go ahead and look at one of these areas where David couldn't get out of his own way just about. So what I'd like to do is go ahead and read verses 2 down through 10, and then we'll see how far we get there through the rest of the chapter tonight. At 1 Samuel 25, verse number 2, "And there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel, and the man was very great. And he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and of beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings, and he was of the house of Caleb. And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. And David sent out 10 young men, and David said unto the young men, Get you up to Carmel, and go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity, Peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. And now I have heard that thou hast shearers. Now thy shepherds were, which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them, all the while they were in Carmel. Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. Wherefore, let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand, unto thy servants, and to thy son David." And when David's young men came, and they spake to Nabal according to all those words in the name of David, and ceased. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master." Let's go ahead and read verse 11. "Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed from my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be?" Okay. So, as we said before, verse number 1 talks about how Samuel has died. And it really does seem like David's spiritual compass needs desperately to be calibrated as we go through the rest of this chapter here, because it's definitely off kilter. Really seems like it may have even got buried right along Samuel in the process. Long as Samuel was alive, you know, yeah, David made a couple of mistakes. You know, obviously, a couple times he didn't stop to pray, but you still see him with a lot of patience. Now, I personally titled the lesson here "Losing Patience," because, quite frankly, David, he's been going through an awful lot. But when he gets rebuffed here by Nabal, he loses his patience. And that's it. He's had it. He's fed up to here with it. No more. I ain't going to take it. I'm going to put this dude here in his place. And quite frankly, you know what? We get in the same situation from time to time. Someone just, they push us too hard, constantly push us, and we finally snap. Or everything else has been happening in life, and then we get that one moment where something gets said. Maybe it wasn't said correctly. We misheard it. We misinterpreted it, and we just snap. And one moment like that can ruin so much good. And David just about did it. Now the Lord ends up, as you read through the rest of the chapter, protecting David from himself. But there's still a little bit of a price for him to pay. And when we lose patience, yeah, there is going to be some price for us to pay as well. So let's go ahead and go back to verse number 2 and see what we got. And there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel, and the man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now, right off the bat, this is not Mount Carmel, where Elijah took on the prophets of Baal over in 1 Kings chapter 18. This is just Carmel. It's just like a region. You know, they're like saying we live in the Calumet region, where we don't live in Calumet. You know, there's a Calumet City, Calumet Park, so on and so forth, but we're just in the Calumet region type thing. So that's basically what's going on here, because Mount Carmel was located up in the tribe of Asher's area. Carmel here is located in the tribe of Judah. Which David basically, as far as when he was there in Israel, he didn't leave the tribe of Judah's territory. He went to Philistines, he went to Moab, but he did not leave out of Judah's area to Simeon's or Benjamin's or anything like that. And it says here that Nabal had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. That he was a great man. Again, this is in an age when having animals, that was the currency of the day. The larger the size flocks you got, the richer you are. And with such a large amount of animals, he could have easily afforded to take care of David and his people. But he chose to be greedy. It'd be like me having, you know, a plate of fried chicken here. And a couple of chicken legs there, and I don't really eat chicken legs. And my daughter says, "Daddy, can I have a chicken leg?" And I says, "No, they're mine. It's on my plate. Go get your own." That would be me being greedy and not being a very good person. You know, she reaches over to grab one, and I slap her hand. And says, "No, you can't have. Even if you'd ask, same thing. It'd be wrong of me." And that's what's going on here with Nabal. He's just in the wrong for what he's about to do. He's got it. And something that I personally have tried to teach Gracie, whenever you go to a store and you see the Salvation Army red kettles, put something in there. Give them a dollar. Give them whatever change you got, whatever. It's good cause. They're trying to help someone. You help someone. If someone, you know, comes into the church and they need a couple of bucks for cab fare, groceries, gas, whatever, you know, if you got it, go ahead and share it. You know, the Lord's already set it up. All the money belongs to God anyways, so, you know, we can do a little bit more to be a help to people. Nabal here, nah, it's all about him. Verse number 3. Now, the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail, and she was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance, but the man was churlish and evil in his doings, and he was of the house of Caleb. And I want to break down here real quick. There are three names given to us in this verse. Nabal, his name means fool. He's a wealthy man in substance, but lacked wisdom and decency, while being described as churlish. And that word churlish means hard, cruel, and obstinate. This is just some guy, you ain't getting nothing through his thick skull. That's all there is to it. Now, Abigail, her name means my father is joy. She's described as being wise and beautiful, and her actions show that she was such to her very core. Change that real quick. Show that she was such to her very core. So it wasn't just that she's, you know, a beautiful countenance on the outside. Hey, a pretty face is good. But it's what's on the inside that matters. And she had it on the inside in spades. Caleb. Now, this is an interesting one here. Caleb. His name means dog. And in a time when dogs were not man's best friend, when dogs were a bad thing to have around because they'll attack you so they can get food and they're going to do whatever they want. Man, naming your kid dog? Really? But as we know, Caleb, that we're told back there all the way in the book of Numbers, he was a good dude. He was one of the two faithful men who crossed over, came back with the reports. Hey, we can do this. Let's go. The people said, no, we ain't going to. And Caleb's like, come on, we can do this. We can take them. Now, again, he's one of these people here. And he's the one when they finally crossed over. Give me that mountain. I'm going to conquer that mountain. And he conquered that mountain. You know, he's right there in Hebron. And like I said, Carmel is right there by Hebron. And it turns out that the Caleb, it says here that he was of the house of Caleb. The only other Caleb that's mentioned in the Bible aside from this verse right here is that Caleb. So it seems that not all of Caleb's offspring followed in his footsteps. Something somewhere along the way went awry, and now they're just doing their own thing. But as we continue on through the chapter here, we're going to find out why it's important that he's of the house of Caleb. So those of you who don't already know, don't worry about it. We're going to explain it. Those of you who do know, don't spoil it for nobody. Let's see. Cross that out and double that somehow. This may have been an arranged marriage for them. This was, of course, at a time when, you know, marriages were arranged. They weren't marrying for love. And her parents could have easily traded her for gold or some other dowry, a bunch of animals, whatever the case would be. I mean, he is rich, and certainly Caleb getting that mountain there in Hebron, you have to imagine he would become rich, and that would get passed down to the kids. And if they take care of the family resources, it's going to keep growing. So by the time it gets down here to Nabal, this foolish clown here, he's got money. He's got more than a few coins in his pocket. Enough to go buy him a beautiful, wise wife. Too bad it didn't rub off on him. Verse number 4. And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. So shearing time was a time of great celebration. All the hard work of tending the flock was about to pay off. It was now time to sell all of that precious wool. I got a note here in my Bible. I'm wanting to say it's over there in Luke 15 in regards to the one out of 100 sheep. But the note is that sheep farmers turn a profit if they get 65% of their sheep to market. 65%. So you think about that shepherd going for the one. He's at 99% already. What more does he need? And of course, there's, you know, the in the Mosaic law that the shepherd has to be able to account for all the sheep. If he loses one, he has to make every effort to get it back, bring back, you know, parts of the animal to show he didn't kill it and eat it for himself. And yet here we are, 3,000 sheep are getting sheared, and David's men, of course, have made all that effort to preserve all of these so that Nabal's going to be harvesting all of that precious wool. He's going to be making bank here when he gets done with the shearing. So it makes a whole lot of sense that he's able to throw such a party. And 3,000 sheep, you know he's got the extra to be able to share with David. But unfortunately, people are yahoos. Verse 5 was, and David sent out 10 young men, and David said unto the young men, get you up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. Of course, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, I don't want to put an undue burden on Nabal by coming myself and say, hey, Nabal, how you doing? I'm David, and I think what we need to be doing is you need to be, you know, give me a little something here because, you know, we protect your sheep. He allows for pleasantries. He allows room for everybody to be, you know, relaxed and calm by sending these 10 young men, you know, 10 of them. That way they got enough manpower to be able to carry all the stuff back. But so obviously there would have been a spokesman of the 10. Not all 10 were talking at the same time. They're not kids. You know, kids are. They'll talk at the same time. But, you know, someone will come, say, Nabal, sir, how you doing? And explain the whole situation to him. So David's trying to be polite and fair and not back Nabal into a corner where Nabal feels like, I've got to do this. I don't have a choice. Or, you know what, I'm just going to go and kill all 10 of you now just because I don't like what you did to me here. You know, it kept everything on the up and up. Verse 6, and thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity, peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. So the verse begins with the notation that Nabal was living in prosperity. He's got the mansion, he's got the money, he's got the cars, he's got the finer things of life, he's got the Rolexes on, he's got the latest suits, he's got on a nice Italian leather shoes, he's decked out, he's got what he needs. But this also contrasts very much with the hard life of David and his men that are following him. Go say to the guy who's living in prosperity, we ain't got nothing. Okay? And of course, like I said, this was a common gracious greeting that's being offered up at this time of the year. It's kind of like, it's Christmas time for them. Everybody's celebrating. Everybody is feeling good about what's going on. So you would think also with that whole business, everybody's feeling good about what's going on, he might be a little bit more generous on top of that. So if you're going to ask something, it's always a good idea to start off by giving some well wishes and platitudes to butter the person up. Of course, a lot of people sitting there like, yeah, what do you want? I know you want something. Verse 7. And now I have heard that thou hast shearers. Now thy shepherds, which were with us, we hurt them not. Neither was there aught missing unto them all the while they were in Carmel. Okay. So this, like we said, it's a time of great celebration for whoever owned the flock, all the shearing's being done. The messengers were to give the report of how David's men had benefited Nabal by making sure he didn't lose a single sheep to anyone or anything. Excuse me. Anything David and his men could do to help the shepherds had been their pleasure to do. Now you think about that right there. How many people? I'm only going to do it if you pay me. I got no goodness in my heart. My time is valuable. You think about these people nowadays, they've so got minimum wage and living wage confused as being the same thing, and they're not. Minimum wage for minimum skills. Living wage, you want that, get more skills. Get a better job. Well, I'm sorry, people going to college, getting college education, and still flipping burgers at McDonald's. Number one, you probably should have gotten a little bit better major than English Lit. Something that could actually be useful would have been a good idea, But, what can I say? I'm going to move on, I promise. Like I said, this was their pleasure to do. There was at that time a general understanding that those who protected the flock as mercenaries would receive some form of reward at the time of shearing. Okay? Now, there were those, and still are to this day, that believe they are owed whatever they desire. Especially in that region of the world when it comes to the flocks. They come through and say, hey, you know what? My grandfather owned this land, 100 years ago. I'm taking this animal. And as far as they're concerned, it's theirs. And it is sad to say, it's like these punks nowadays, I deserve, give me. And no, you don't deserve. You work for it. You don't go out and just take because you think you should. They would claim some sheep as a tax for using the land or just outright steal some. So such protection was hard work that required a watchful eye both day and night. So that's another thing right there. It's not like you get to lay down and take it easy because it's the daylight now. There's no one going to come around now. Well, no, there were people who were brazen enough to come and do it right there in the daylight. Thank you very much. Those who will sneak in at night, thank you very much. So they always had to be paying attention. And for the shepherds, it's bad enough there ain't that many of them out there watching 3,000 sheep. Okay, you think about it. It's not like he's got 1,000 shepherds out there, so it's a 3-to-1 ratio. Yeah, I should have looked it up. I didn't think about it until just now. What, a dozen, 2 dozen at the most for 3,000 sheep? I mean, they're ranchers right now. 3,000 sheep, they'd be going under because that's not enough in their flocks. So you can imagine he really wouldn't have had that many employees out there. So all the extra help he can get, that's a huge benefit for him. And it doesn't say that he had a whole lot of servants. It said he had a whole lot of animals. Okay, so the more the merrier, the safer everything is. Verse 8. It says, "Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. Wherefore, let the young men find favor in thine eyes. For we come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand, unto thy servants and to thy son David." So Nabal's men could easily verify what the messengers were claiming. David's men were well known to them, and they had worked side by side. It's always good when you've got a good working relationship with somebody. This feast was also to honor his servants doing such a good job with the flocks. Therefore, he said that, "I've killed these animals for my servants." David's men had worked with them, and if it had been possible, would have gladly been present as well to celebrate. Since they couldn't, they were politely asking for a share to be sent back to them, so they could also celebrate with Nabal. Such practices take place to this very day, and when refused, are met with those same people coming and demanding what is now no longer any sort of tribute for their services, but their right, and they will not be denied. And David almost did this exact same thing in verses 21 and 22. Because, as y'all know, David does lose his cool and does decide he's going to go put Nabal in his place and everything, because he suddenly got that mentality, you know what, this is my right. I'm going to do this. How dare you? And like I said, Samuel's dead. David's moral compass, it's off kilter, if not missing at the moment. So he ends up acting the same way that everybody else in the area would do, which is a terrible thing. And there are certainly instances, even in our own churches, where someone decides, I'm leaving and I donated this thing 20 years ago and I'm taking it with me now. I have actually experienced that. And it's a horrible, horrible thing. Just how people, I've got to have my rights. Then you misunderstand what rights are. Continuing on, though, it says, "The request for whatever comes to his hand is him asking for anything that Nabal could spare that wouldn't add any expenses to his party. Such celebrations usually had more than enough supplies on hand, so this would not be a problem." You think back to when we had the prayer meeting here a couple of weeks ago, and we had that table was just filled with goodies. And we told everybody, says, "Get what you want, and then go back, get more. And then when you're done and you're full, go grab you some, put it in a doggy bag, and take it home, because I don't want it being, given to me and my family, because I don't need it. It's all good, but I don't need it." And we still all ended up having to bring stuff home with us. And people took stuff home with them. They ate stuff here, and we had more than enough. Same situation going on right here. There was more than enough. And Abigail proves it with the amount that she brings out to David. Nabal was not going to be put out in any way, shape, or form by being a decent human being, other than the fact that it would have made him a decent human being. And for some people, that hurts, to be a decent human being. They can't live with themselves. And Nabal was that kind of a person. And then David has the speech finished off by saying, "Thy son, David." What he's doing is he's acknowledging his position as being inferior to Nabal. Yeah, David is the Lord's anointed to be the next king. Yeah, David has slayed Goliath. David is in command of 600 men plus their families. But David's saying, you are the man. I'm a nobody. Please, sir. It's kind of like that Oliver Twist. Please, sir, may I have some more? Yeah. That's all that's going on there, but, you know, Nabal's Nabal. Let's skip down to verse 10. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. This had been a reasonable request for services rendered, but Nabal chose to insult David instead. As far as Nabal was concerned, David had betrayed Saul. Maybe he didn't care either way, you know, about the whole thing with David and Saul, until David came along and says, please, sir, may I have some? Then all of a sudden it becomes a matter of, yeah, a whole bunch of servants breaking away from their masters nowadays. And I know you, David. I know that's exactly what you're doing. I've heard the reports about you, David. Yeah, it's all about David. I'm not falling for it, David. Terrible thing. Had Nabal asked either question by itself, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? If he had just broke that, who's David? Okay, I don't know who David is. Tell me who David is. Completely different than who is David and who is the son of Jesse. He just said, who's the son of Jesse? Either way, by asking one question, he's asking for information. He's asking, okay, who are we talking about here? So I know what's going on. Get me caught up to speed. But by saying, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? Come on. I know you. I know what you're all about. I know what's going on here. You're just trying to take from me because you think you can. You think the world is owed to you. That's all there is to it. And that's the attitude that he's now copying with David's servants when he says, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? He's not asking for information. He is insulting David at this point. Let's see. However, he asked both questions together, so he shows he knew exactly what was going on, what he was talking about, what he was doing. Undoubtedly, there had been many rumors going around about David, but they all distilled down to him rebelling against their king. And who knows if Nabal even really worried about King Saul. He's rich. It's just the idea that David had the guts to pull this stunt. How dare you? Verse 11. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed from my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? There is a total of seven I's and my's showing his pride and self-importance. Okay? But this parallels something here, and I do want to turn to this over in Luke's Gospel, chapter number 12. I think this is very important. Luke's Gospel, chapter number 12. Okay, now let me reread verse 11 here. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be. Seven times. Luke 12, verse 16. Jesus here, he says, and he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he said, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years, take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Jesus ends up giving the same thing. Now, granted, there's only six eyes here instead of seven, but the idea being, it's that same foolishness. Yeah, this here was the guy, the ground brought forth plentifully for him. But it also said the ground of a certain rich man. So we know this is an event that actually happened here. Now, Luke does label it as a parable. So perhaps, you know, it was a matter, Jesus was an itinerant preacher, so he'd preach the same sermon in several locations. Just change it a little bit to match up with the area that he's preaching. So maybe it got, you know, changed up where, yeah, there was a rich man who had a large crop yield that one year. Maybe Jesus also kind of was thinking about Nabal here in Nabal's statement in verse 11. All those I's and my's, and hey, I've got this. Well, you know what? Foolish pride is going to cost you dearly. It cost the man there in Luke chapter 12, and it ends up costing Nabal here. So what time we got? It is 6:30, so we'll go ahead and we'll let off right there. And we will pick up 1 Samuel 25 in verse 15 next week. But Nabal has certainly set himself up for a fall. Did anyone have any questions, comments, or concerns? Yep. All right, then we'll go ahead and